From the Palestine News Network, I'm Kristen S. with This Week in Review. It's the 19th of February. Living in Jerusalem became more difficult this week as the Israeli administration closed the remaining gate in the wall, effectively blocking the city and its northern suburbs. The town of El-Rom is closed, with residents now having to pass through Ramallah's Kalandia checkpoint if they want to reach Jerusalem. Residents are also under threat of having their Israeli-issued Jerusalem blue identifications revoked, as the Israeli administration continues its Judaization of the city. The Israeli declaration of the Dahiyat el-Barid area near El-Rom as a closed military zone went into effect on Monday. Head of the El-Rom Village Council, Serhan Salema, notes that the International Court of Justice ruling was ignored 4 years ago as the Israelis built the wall down the main street of the northern Jerusalem suburb. By closing this gate, the wall around Jerusalem city is totally completed. So by that, all the entrances to Jerusalem are under Israeli control. You have to pass through a military checkpoint such as Kalandia checkpoint, Rachel's Tomb checkpoint, or the Ziyam checkpoint. The wall is completed by closing the final gate. Exit or entrance for Palestinians is forced to be through these checkpoints. That means that whoever is now inside the wall, Jerusalem residents, will not be able to go to Jerusalem without giving their identifications to pass through these gates. This new Israeli measure means that thousands of Jerusalem residents are effectively no longer Jerusalem residents, and they are subjected to having their identifications revoked. There is an Israeli law that says the total of all Jerusalemites holding the blue ID and their fathers and grandfathers were born in Jerusalem and lived there their entire lives. In the eyes of Israeli law, they are residents, not citizens. Therefore, their place of residency can be changed. With residence, you can change where they live, the name of the city in which they reside. Therefore, they are under threat of losing their Jerusalem ID. Whoever lives for over 7 years outside what the Israeli municipality sets as the borders of Jerusalem loses his right to reside in Jerusalem. And this is the most dangerous aspect of the policy, because we are now talking about 120,000 people who are around Jerusalem, now outside the borders, who hold the Jerusalem ID. At any time, they are at risk of the Israelis imposing a policy that these people are not Jerusalemites, and at any time could be forbidden from entering the city and its neighborhoods as if they have the West Bank ID. As the head of the El-Rom local council, Serhan Salema, what can be done as the Israelis continue to disregard international law and the United Nations? Throughout 4 years, we've had a long struggle in the Israeli courts, and there were also popular activities, demonstrations, sit-ins, and hunger strikes to stop the building of the wall. Palestinians and supporters were continuously protesting the forced new reality. Today, we only have, as a measure, political pressure, but that doesn't mean that we have put aside the possibility of continuing the popular resistance or action. But as a whole, the issue of Jerusalem is a first-level, top-priority political issue and has to be put on the table immediately. We cannot wait for discussion and action or to deal with such an issue after the wall is finished, nor should we wait for final status resolution, as has been suggested. There's supposed to be a Palestinian decision on this vital issue of the situation of Jerusalem city. The Israeli goal with the wall is the Judaization of Jerusalem and having all of the Palestinian Jerusalemites as a minority that do not exceed 17%. This is according to the Israeli report on Jerusalem that I saw for the year 2020, written by the Israeli municipality. It says that Arabs must become a minority and not be a majority. This policy makes it possible to get rid of them at any moment. That was Serhan Salema, head of the El-Rom Village Council. You're listening to This Week in Review on the Palestine News Network. For more news, see english.pnn.ps. As the Israeli wall continues to engulf the West Bank, invasions and arrests in Beit Lahem's Hossein village, Jenin's Kabatia, Ramallah's Na'lin, and Hebron in the south went on throughout the week, with the political prisoner population growing. Israeli forces targeted the town of Jayus in the Qalqilia governorate, an area surrounded by the wall and active in the popular resistance. Director of the Youth Committee of the Stop the Wall campaign, Hamad Othman, was in Jayus on Wednesday when the Israeli military held the town hostage.
Hamad Athman, can you talk about what happened yesterday in Jayus and what's been going on there for the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, first of all, I would like to explain to the people and to the international community about what's happening last night in Jayus yesterday, and especially like to explain to them exactly how the Israeli army attacked the village in the middle of the night at 12 in the morning. They enter with a 25 jeep and they start to shoot sound bombs to wake up everybody in the village and to use the loudspeaker and talk loudly in the loudspeaker, and this is one of the things. It was scared the kids, it scared the people that something is going on in the village. And like after they moving all over the village, like shouting and speaking in Hebrew quickly so the people that they cannot understand them in the loudspeaker, and shooting sound bombs everywhere. Then after like half an hour, like around 12:30, they start to call for a curfew, and the village under the curfew like for a long time, and the people is not allowed to get out of the houses. And after they surround the village with the soldiers in foot, so they were around 25 jeeps moving inside the village, and there were a lot of soldiers. We don't have the number of the soldiers who were in foot, but they were like, when the light come out, they were like more than 100 soldiers. So what's happening, they put the whole village under the curfew, and they start to get to ask the people from the south side of the village next to the apartheid wall, the people who's living next to the apartheid wall, to move to search their houses and to get out of their houses. So they were searching the houses of the people at the south gate, the one who lived next to the south gate, and they start with the mayor's house and with other two houses. So first thing that they did it, they arrest the mayor's son, and after that they arrest another two youth from the area next to the south gate. And like we have to think about how they scared the people and how they scared the children there, and the boys who was like under the age, like when they seen like an Israeli soldiers entering to their house, and they were coloring their face also. They were putting their like some color in face, their face that look like we are in a war or something. So this is one of the things also that makes the people to be scared and to afraid the people. So then after that, they start to move in every house, and they divide the village to three areas according to their strategy, like the south side of the village and the middle of the village and the north side of the village. And they take it area after area, and they start to arrest the youth, or if all the youth in the houses, they ask them to get out of the house, and they talk them like how they talk a sheep, like every 20 with five soldiers, and they talk them to the school. In the school, it was the worst thing, because there in the school, they divide the youth in each class with two intelligence to interrogate them.
Hamad Athman, can you talk about briefly who was specifically targeted? I know that there were some youth from the Stop the Wall campaign, and that the Israeli forces are really going after Jayus in part because of its resistance campaign to the wall and to occupation.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is the reason, because Jayus village is like, they start in November, last November, during the activity against the Israeli apartheid week. And they were targeting Jayus because Jayus was the strongest example for the whole West Bank in resistance against the wall. And this is like historically worked, because the first demonstration has been started against the apartheid wall, is started from Jayus, and all the campaigns against the apartheid wall is started from Jayus. And when the people being active again, so they start in this November, and the first demonstration, the people were like, they destroyed the gate and they entered to the fence and they cut it many times, and every demonstration the people were so angry. And that's the thing, that our demonstration is a peaceful demonstration. We are just carrying the Palestinian flag, and that's it, nothing else. And we face the Israeli soldiers holding the M16s, and they're using the sound bombs and the tear gas and the rubber bullets. And after the third demonstration, they start to use the live bullets. And we have 10 youth who got injured with live bullets in the leg and in the back, and more than 75 youth, they were got injured by rubber bullets, and many people, they have problem with the tear gas. So the people who were targeted is the youth. And in this campaign that Israel did for against the youth yesterday, they were targeting also the young people, and there is from the people who were arrested, and now they are in the interrogation place in Hawara military camp. Most of them are students at the university who studied at the university in Najah University and in Al-Quds Open University in Tulkarem and Qalqilya. I'm saying that they are targeting the new generation and the students, the one who will be the leaders of the future and the one who is like, they will be presenting Palestine.
Mohammed Othman, the youth coordinator of the Stop the Wall campaign, thanks so much for taking your time.
You are very welcome.
This is This Week in Review on PNN. The siege in the Gaza Strip continues this week and Israeli forces killed a man in the north. Journalist Hussein Jabr says the situation is not better than it was before the major attacks of January that killed 1,330 Palestinians. He also talked today about the issue of the captured Israeli soldier being pegged to ceasefire negotiations being mediated by Cairo, which include an opening of the crossings.
Frankly speaking, about the situation in Gaza, it's still the same for the war. There's no big changes in the field, in the ground. There is a lack of different things, different materials. For example, the electricity, cooking gas. There is a severe shortage of cooking gas, and we are suffering till now. If there is no electricity, also there is no water in the high buildings in Gaza, and people are still suffering from insufficient water. Running water in Gaza, and also there is some areas in Gaza. There is a problem of the sewage and the infrastructure also. But the main problem right now is the people who don't have their homes was destroyed during the war, and they are living in these bad conditions. They are living in tents or in different conditions. This morning, the Israeli invaded Gaza city, and they entered and they shot towards the houses of Gaza. And as we learned before, maybe 2 hours, that they arrested a man from Gaza, and he was taken to the Israeli jail.
Which neighborhood did they invade, and how many tanks came in?
Actually speaking, there are many tanks entered the Gaza city itself, the east of Gaza, in Zaytun neighborhood, and they began shelling during the night. They began shelling and targeting the houses of the people in that area. And Hamas brigade, Rajid Qassam, also claimed that they managed to face and to struggle to stop special unit of the Israeli army who tried to enter Gaza city last night, and they claimed or said that they managed to stop them. At the same time, this came after hours of the Israeli declaration that they will not go to a ceasefire without completing or ending the issue of the kidnapped soldier Gilad Shalit in Gaza. From my point of view, the situation maybe came worse than before.
The crossings have been closed for the past 2 years, most of the time, under the Israeli siege. With that continuing, are any reconstruction materials getting into the Gaza Strip to deal with the people that were rendered homeless because of the major attacks?
No, till now the crossing is the same. They are closing all the time, almost the time they are closed. And if they open for some goods like food or something like that, but they didn't allow for the material which can be used in the rebuilding houses. And the Israeli, as I learned, the Israeli is connecting the allowing these materials to get in Gaza with the ceasefire and Gilad Shalit issue. I didn't expect that there will be, that the Palestinian here, the homeless Palestinian, will be able to rebuild their houses without ceasefire and without ending Gilad Shalit. And also, these issues is connected also with the reconciliation between the Palestinian faction in Gaza. I mean, this issue must be solved in the same time. The issues there must be. And the Israelis, till now, right now, is punishing the people, not only in the material which is used for building the homes, and all the areas, you know, and also that they are preventing any Palestinians from even smuggling those who are smuggling from the tunnels in Rafah. They are preventing them. They are attacking the area between Gaza and Egypt. And the situation is getting worse and worse in Gaza. And this was noticed also by the international organization which works here in Gaza, like UNRWA. For example, me, myself, I am working in a local newspaper, Al-Ayam newspaper. And the Israelis right now didn't allow my newspaper to get in Gaza. Gaza right now without newspapers. Imagine that, more than 1.5 million are without newspapers, which is printed in West Bank. They didn't allow for Al-Ayam, Al-Hayat Al-Jadida, and Al-Quds from entering Gaza. This is a kind of our suffering as journalists.
And what do you think about the Cairo talks, whether or not they will be held? They've been postponed again. These national reconciliation talks have been talked about for 2 years. And of course, as you mentioned, that issue is linked to the issue of the Hudna or the ceasefire.
Yeah, you know, the factions yesterday, they were ready to go to Egypt and to have negotiations and to have reconciliation, but the issue of ceasefire at Hudna influenced the Egyptian effort. Because of that, the Egyptians are not willing to face problems like what happened in November, the last November. They don't want to release that circumstances. Because of that, they suggested to postpone the meetings with the factions for days. I don't know how many days, or it will be 3 or 5 or more than, but the Egyptians are they're willing to end the Palestinian split and to have reconciliation between factions. You know, without reconciliation, without ending Gilad Shalit and the Hudna, they will not be peace, or they will not be calm, and the situation will be getting worse and worse. But all the factions here in Gaza today, they expressed that their hope that the Egyptians will continue their efforts to end the Palestinian split.
Thank you so much, Hassan Jabbar.
Thank you very much.
After 2 years of changing the date, the internal dialogue for national reconciliation was again postponed. It was slated, this time, for the 22nd of February. Munja Jadu, a West Bank journalist affiliated with Fatah, who says he greatly appreciates the role of Egypt in negotiations, says that it was the Egyptians who folded to American pressure and forced the postponement.
I think that, you know, the Egyptians made a wrong thing when they did that, because Fatah and Hamas, there is an anger inside. A spokesman of Fatah and Hamas say that they don't have anything to do with this. The Egyptian was angry from Israeli position because of the new ideas or a new Israeli position toward Tahdi'ah.
To the new Israeli position to link the issues of Gilad Shalit and the truce.
Yeah, and because of that, the Egyptian, they should deal in a hard way with the Israelis, not the Palestinians. The dialogue between Fatah and Hamas, Hamas have no relationship with what happened with the Israelis. So the Egyptians should take a strong position from the Israelis, who delay and who make it bad for, you know, or they stop the negotiation or put a new condition for the negotiation for a Tahdi'ah. So I think there is an anger inside Fatah and inside Hamas, because both sides realize that, you know, there is no way for them except that they should be united in order to face the Israeli or the new Israeli government that supported from the right, and which is, you know, all its action will be against Palestinians. And Palestinians, if they weren't united, you know, this will be make a problem for them. So it's not a good decision from the Egyptian to take to postpone the interior dialogue between Fatah and Hamas.
One Egyptian source in the government said this morning that it was good that the dialogue was postponed. Of course, this was his public position, but he said because it's been postponed, it will give Hamas and Fatah more time to talk amongst themselves and to be more prepared for a successful dialogue in the future.
We trust the Egyptian. We as Palestinians, we trust them. They stand, they support us from the beginning of the يعني the revolution, and they stand for us a lot. We hope that, you know, their position is for, you know, to give more time for both sides. And I think, you know, there is a good signs. For example, yesterday we heard that, you know, there were a meeting in the West Bank between Fatah leaders and Hamas leaders. Jibril Arjoub head Fatah delegation in the PA or in the West Bank, and Rafat Nassif, his legislative council from Hamas, from the West Bank, head the Hamas delegation. And they agreed to make the atmosphere better for the dialogue. And this is good, you know, we have no meeting between Fatah and Hamas in the West Bank, in Gaza, since a year and a half. So this is a good sign. And I think, you know, they can have a meeting and have a dialogue and make the atmosphere better. Because if we are talking about media, the atmosphere between Fatah and Hamas is so bad in the media. The media, each media for Fatah or Hamas attack the other side. So they decide to stop all these, you know, actions on the media level. And this will help, you know, will help them. And we hope that, you know, with the help of the Egyptian and Arabs, in the end, they can solve the problem. Because if they didn't solve the problem, so we are, as a Palestinian people, we are losing. Fatah losing, Hamas losing, and in the end, Palestinian people are losing. So there are different good signs from both sides. We hope that they will reach an agreement.
Thanks for joining me, journalist Manja Jado from the West Bank. Thanks to engineers Samir Saad and Shahraz Rishmawi. For more news, see english.pnn.ps. I'm Kristen S.